Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our talk on the mental health needs of Latino male youth who have been affected by violence. My name is Vanessa Cardona, and this is my colleague, Perla Flores. And I'd like to actually acknowledge two of our other colleagues who contributed greatly to this work but couldn't be here today, Solange Bonilla and Ana Carranza. This assessment is a requirement of the San Francisco State University MPH coursework. So what that means is during our coursework, we're put onto teams and partnered with a community-based organization who then chooses its focus of the assessment on a relevant health issue to their community. And so our team was partnered with the Spanish-Speaking Citizens Foundation. They're a social service agency in Oakland, and they've been around for a long time, it's about 1965. And they have various programs that help East Bay families, such as after-school program for youth, parent workshops, and citizen and immigration services. We have no relationships to disclose, so we'll move on into the outline for our presentation today. We're going to start with what we set out to understand with the research objective, then talk a little bit about the target population of our study. We'll then get into methods, how we conducted our study. Then we will take a step back and look at how violence translates into mental health. We'll then move on to key findings and key recommendations, and we say key because due to the time constraints, we're not able to talk all about the full list of findings and recommendations, but if you're interested, you can go to the APHA website, and they have it, we've uploaded it there for you. It's entitled Community Brief, so you can take a look at the full list there. And then we'll end with acknowledgments. So the goal of our research was to understand the mental health needs of youth who were directly or indirectly affected by violence and how these needs were being met by mental health services and what was lacking. Our population was Latino male youth, ages 11 through 18, and these were chosen, this population was chosen because they make up a huge portion of our collaborating agency's clients. So the Spanish-speaking Citizens Foundation is overwhelmingly, or most of the clients are Latino, and they have various after-school groups which serve to be our study participants, the youth that took place in the focus groups. So the youth young as 11 years old represent the youngest focus group at the elementary school, and the 18-year-olds represent the oldest youth at the high school focus groups. And the topic of mental health needs arising from exposure to violence was specifically chosen by Spanish-speaking Citizens Foundation as a pressing need in their community at the time of the assessment. However, I do want to emphasize that violence is an aspect of this community and definitely does not define it. So our group conducted three focus groups totaling 20 youth, and as I mentioned, at the elementary, at the middle school, and at the high school level. And we conducted four key informant interviews with people who worked and lived in the Fruitvale, professionals, after-school program facilitators, educators, health educators, and a licensed psychologist. And this was all the data was collected in the summer of 2011. So the literature was very explicit in showing how violence translates to mental health. There was a link between violence, trauma, and behavior issues, or as the slide refers to, internal and external manifestations. And some examples of these manifestations are stress, depression, anxiety, fear, disruptive or aggressive behavior, school disengagement, and academic failure. So as you can see, these have very serious implications for youth on an individual health level, and if not taken care of in their adolescence, they just continue to move on into adulthood and through their life course. And especially with the last two that focus on school disengagement and academic failure, those also have very profound implications for the opportunities for success. Our study revealed a definite need for mental health services, and we found that these mental health services did in fact exist for Latino male youth, but profound problems existed also with how they were presented, or mainly about access issues. And a lot of these access issues were structural, so they came from within, but some came from outside, such as illustrated in the first of our findings. The stigma of being labeled crazy is a key barrier to accessing mental health services for Latino male youth ages 11 through 18. ¿Quién quiere ser loco? Who wants to be crazy? Nobody wants to see the doc. Nobody wants to be identified as being crazy or mentally ill. So we saw this really strong link between services, mental health services, and being crazy or mentally unstable. And this link was often so strong and so negative that people were willing to forego services just so they're not associated with that. And in one particular case, we heard of a parent limiting or restricting care for their child who was in need of mental health services, mainly because they didn't want the neighbors to think that their child there's something wrong with their child or that they were crazy. So this whole "qué dirán," what will they say, you know, was very prevalent in a lot of the talks with the youth. So another thing that we learned from our study is that youth deal with stress from violence in various ways. Some are positive. We heard about engaging in sports activities such as soccer, hiking, danza, and then some were not so positive, substance use, marijuana, alcohol. Another strategy outlined in finding number two was something that came up, and it focused on the youth talking to people they can trust to navigate the stress caused by violence. And in a lot of cases, these people weren't folks that had a license to practice mental health. We practice mental health at beauty salons and barbershops. Those are our therapists. My best mental health counselor besides my abuela, grandmother, was my barber. I'm sitting there trying to get a haircut, and when he saw me really stressed, he would cut my hair slower because he was going to try to talk to me. He was a mental health practitioner with scissors. So the youth cited, as people they trust, they cited friends, they cited school counselors, they cited partners or significant others, who they were very clear that was not in this group was parents. We can talk a little bit more about that later. This finding was very interesting for various reasons. The first was because it made our group really kind of look at mental health services in a more, the way the youth were defining it, in more of like informal relationships. And in a way, the youth expanded our view of how mental health services can exist or were being exercised, and it was kind of more of a holistic approach. Secondly, what this taught us is that if structural issues or structural access issues to mental health care services are limited, or they're taking a long time to reform, or the changes to actually get them to service the youth correctly are taking a while, and if this is currently working for youth, then how can we do more of this? And now I'd like to introduce my colleague Perla, who will continue with the findings and recommendations.
Good morning, everybody. I'm going to talk about the last two key findings and the recommendations that we came up with. So number three was actually talking yet again, you know, about like some kinds of barriers that Latino male youth experience in their immediate environments. And anxiety, fear, and hypervigilance were feelings expressed by youth participants. Unquote, you know, the quote that I'm about to show you illustrates these very feelings. I see too much people getting shot, and I've seen a couple people getting killed, so that's why I be thinking about that, death. Even when I'm watching the news, I'm watching them. But at the same time, I'm thinking, what if that was me? This underscores the survival mentality. It affects their academic performance. It's very unmotivating to feel like you're not gonna live to see tomorrow. This is pretty much like the way that they feel on a daily basis. It does not help to think about their long-term future. Another youth expressed that if a Latino male grows up to be 18, they feel like they have already lived a lot in this community, which is, you know, pretty intense way of feeling, right? They're still underage, you know, they're not even 21 yet, and they already feel like if they end up living to that point, they already, that's a goal, that's a really good thing. And key finding number four kind of talks about this a little bit further, but more in terms of what can we do about these youth accessing mental health services so that they can start a sort of healing process, right? But they're very limited still within the community, and I think in general, in different ways. There's a quote here that I'm about to show you too that Akeem Foreman talks about, that there are resources, but they're, again, you know, very limited. We have a lack of resources. Just in this area, we refer people to Sol y Luna, and they have a waiting list. Other places in the Fruitvale area also have a waiting list. We have the kids that do not have papers. We do not have places to refer them to because they, the agencies with mental health services, require Medicare or some type of health insurance. So again, there's a lack of funding or insufficient funding for services that are there. Also, immigration status is a really big one. A lot of youth, you know, who are undocumented, either whether they know or not, you know, they don't have access to any type of mental health service. Some are accessible, but then again, like you need Medi-Cal or Medicaid to access those in a long term. Private therapists are really expensive too. And just to give you an example that is very recent, the deferred action for childhood arrivals for undocumented students, like even with that type of special status, it doesn't guarantee any type of health care through the Affordable Care Act. And undocumented people in general cannot access the Affordable Care Act at all, which, you know, brings it to the narrow eligibility requirements for to be seen by someone or to even talk to someone in a clinical setting. Also, the 5150 cases, which, you know, are borderline suicidal or just very risky cases where somebody is going to cause harm to someone, they're prioritized, you know, which they should be. But at the same time, those cases where, you know, kids just want to talk to someone are not as prioritized because there's just no funding for them. And we're moving on to recommendations, which, you know, go hand in hand with our findings. This one would go hand in hand with finding number one, which is, you know, talking about the label of being crazy. There's definitely that stigma, that taboo, that if you go and talk to someone, you're going to be labeled as a crazy person. And making mental health services more inviting to the Latino community, it's a key, way to tackle this issue, including community leaders and agencies that want to get involved in the healing of the Latino youth. It's really important also to make it a different environment for them so that they don't think that it's a place where they're going to be labeled as, you know, a patient that's going to go to the psych ward or something like that. So making youth feel comfortable and catering to their comfort zone, maybe even going to them rather than expecting them to come to us, would be something to think about. The key recommendation two talks a little bit about reviewing the requirements to receive mental health services. The question of access, I think it's, you know, it's across the board in a lot of different disciplines, but in inclusion and accessibility, these again can include, you know, undocumented people. You know, it's really important to think about them. California has a really big population of undocumented people that often get, you know, left in the cracks. More access in terms of length of time youth can access mental health. Again, when they reach a certain age, after 18, if their school has a school-based health center, they no longer can access that when they either drop out or just turn into 18. Also, like services and expansion through funding for these services and shortening wait lists. I think it goes hand in hand. If there's more money, of course, there's going to be shorter wait lists for the places that are there. And then key recommendation number three, more safe spaces that don't have to be clinically based. And these can be community centers like the Spanish Speaking Citizens Foundation themselves. There's also another community-based center in Fruitvale called Cultura y Bienestar, which is kind of like an arm of La Clínica de la Raza. But it's the title in itself, you know, it's a lot more inviting. It doesn't talk about mental health it's not as, clinical. It's more about your well-being. It's about you. It's about, like, talking. Fostering more community spaces where you don't need a mental health diagnosis is also important. We think that, you know, fostering these spaces will be like a primary prevention mechanism that we could use so that we can prevent the youth from even going depressed or getting to that mental health diagnosis. Right, so these will be kind of coping, positive coping strategies for them. We want to acknowledge the Latino youth participants. You know, without them, I don't think we would be here today discussing this very important issue. The key informants and community leaders also, they helped us immensely in our findings and, you know, in our overall study. The Spanish-speaking Citizens Foundation staff, including Henry Rosales, Susan Curry Sykes, Karina Najera, Corey Aguilar, you know, who were like instrumental in like us finding who to talk to and creating our focus groups and, you know, getting all the logistics done for us. And then the Spanish-speaking, the San Francisco State University faculty, Jessica Wallen and Judith Audison, which were our co-instructors during the NEES assessment course, and Paul Andrew Rukhaus, who was one of our mentors during the writing process. So thank you so much. And again, we'll also answer questions after everybody's done. Thank you.